Say hello to a new friend on an old road. Take a two-lane trip of memories into mysteries unknown. Come along for the ride. Jim Hinckley's America. Jim Hinckley's America.
Good morning, me amigos. You know, fans of Jim Hinckley's America have heard me say this a time or two, but my pa was a bit of a sage. Counted among the bits of wisdom that he imparted to me over the years was this, Jim. Son, remember, it's better to fill the head with useless knowledge than no knowledge at all. Well, with that said, welcome to another episode of Wake Up with Jim. I have a fascinating and obscure story to share. Take a listen and then decide if it's useless knowledge or if it's a fascinating story about a nearly forgotten chapter in the history of the American auto industry. My bet is that you'll find it interesting enough to share with friends and neighbors, and I hope that it inspires a road trip or two. But before we get to the story of Byron Carter, a forgotten automobile company, and a city that challenged Detroit for the title of Motor City, let's give a hearty thank you to the boys of the Road Crew for our great theme song. If you need a road trip inspiring tune or a great theme song for your Route 66 Odyssey, well, look no further than roadcrew66.com. Now, let's set the Wayback Machine to 1890 and Jackson, Michigan. The company, as well as the cars and trucks that were produced in their factory, is less than a dusty historic footnote today. Only a few eccentrics, trivia buffs, and passionate collectors of brass-era cars remember the Jackson. And yet, for more than two decades, the Jackson Automobile Company produced a durable, reliable, and popular automobile that inspired international brand loyalty. And the company also pioneered the development of four-wheel drive trucks. And the story begins with the bicycle. In 1890, there were less than 25 bicycle manufacturers in the United States. 5 years later, that number had soared to more than 300, and countless businessmen rushed to profit on the tsunami of bicycle mania that was sweeping the country. One of these men was Byron C. Carter of Jackson, Michigan. He was the owner of a successful printing and rubber stamp manufacturing business. And so, in 1894, he partnered with his father, Squire Carter, and established a store for the sale and repair of bicycles. A few years later, the company had manufacturing when Frederick P. Hinckley, a Jackson resident, developed and patented the coaster brake for bicycles. Now, bicycles may have been the focal point of personal transportation evolution during these years, but lurking in the shadows was a contender. The horseless carriage. Excuse me. Byron Carter began his automotive experimentation in 1897 and produced his first motorized vehicle in 1899. This initial prototype utilized a gasoline engine, but Carter was of the opinion that steam was a more practical option. So, in 1901, he introduced the Carter Stanhope, a steamer, and in limited partnership with the Michigan Automobile Company in Grand Rapids, initiated production. Well, it turned out to be a short-lived venture, as the Michigan Automobile Company in 1902 transitioned to the production of automobiles with gasoline engines. This left Carter in a rather interesting position. He had just invested his money and perfected and invented a three-cylinder steam engine. And so, in the summer of 1902, he returned to Jackson, and initiated a meeting with George Matthews, the owner of the Fuller Buggy Company and director of the Jackson City Bank, and Charles Lewis, president of Lewis Spring and Axle and director of the Union Bank of Jackson. Now, we can only speculate about the conversation this meeting, but what we do know is that it resulted in the incorporation of the Jackson Automobile Company to produce steam-powered cars under the JAX name. JAXON name in 1903, as well as gasoline engine models. The Jackson, J-A-C-K-S-O-N, and a companion line, the Orlo. Now, the steam car was sold in two models, both of which used Byron Carter's three-cylinder, six-horsepower engine, and it featured a folding front seat that was placed so low as to avoid interfering with the view of the driver. The steamer was an anemic seller compared to the gasoline models, and so the JAXON was dropped after just mere months of production. And this led to the first fracture between Carter, Lewis, and Matthews. The second issue was Carter's insistence on the development of a friction drive model. Now, these arguments were insurmountable, and he left the company in the spring of 1905 and then formed the motor car company featuring a friction drive car sold under the Carter Car name. Without the innovative vision of Carter, the Jackson Automobile Company became a manufacturer of conventional vehicles. But the Jackson soon developed a reputation for rugged dependability and a fierce brand loyalty among owners. The company's slogan, "No hill too steep, no sand too deep," was earned through participation in endurance runs and events such as the Glidden Tours. And within a few years, it was even exporting vehicles to more than a dozen countries. The 1903 models were available in one- and two-cylinder configuration and were given impressive names. The King of Belgium Touring Car, the side entrance to now Surrey, a runabout. The price range was equally broad, from $650 for the two-passenger Model A with a single-cylinder engine up to $1,250 for the King of Belgium model. Sales growth remained steady and was not diminished by the economic panic of 1907. In 1908, to accommodate plans for increased production, the company was relocated to the former factory of National Wheel Company, a manufacturer of wagons, carts, surreys, sleighs, and buggies. This complex remains a rare and often overlooked site from the first decades of the American auto industry, with the former offices and headquarters for the company, dominated by a distinctive tower, now housing the Commercial Exchange Building. Dating to 1895, the complex was listed on the National Register of Historic Places in 1993. To remain competitive, the company began offering four-cylinder models in late 1905. Oddly enough, the company continued offering the two-cylinder model until 1911, even though it sold poorly. Then, in 1913, in limited partnership with Northway, the all-new Sultanic line with six-cylinder engines was introduced. This was also the year that the company introduced the Duck, an unusual car with backseat driving, another companion model that was a replacement for the Fuller. The big news for 1916 was a new series, the Model 348 and Model 68, with Faro-built V8 engines. The Jackson Automobile Company, like dozens of other automobile manufacturers during this period, should have survived. The company had cash reserves and was professionally managed. The vehicles were competitively priced, and had a favorable reputation. Even though it was never able to challenge the industry giants like General Motors, Ford, Maxwell, Studebaker, or Hudson, sales were consistently strong, and the company had proven itself adept at adapting to changing markets. As an example, during World War I, when nationwide automobile sales slumped, the company curtailed auto production, transitioned into the manufacturing of military equipment, and launched a line of trucks, including a four-wheel drive model. But here's where the first and fatal mistake occurred. When the post-war recession decimated the auto industry, the company has shifted exclusively to the manufacture of heavy-duty trucks. When the company resumed automobile production in 1920, Their marketing edge had evaporated, and truck manufacturing was an extremely limited market. Within 12 short months, the company was on the brink of bankruptcy. To stave off complete collapse, Jackson chose merger in a valiant attempt to remain solvent. In 1923, the Jackson Automobile Company merged with National of Indianapolis and Dixie Flyer of Louisville, Kentucky, to form Associated Motor Industries. For 1924, the Jackson was marketed as the National 4H and the Dixie Flyer as the National 651. That was it. With little fanfare or notice, Jackson, National, and Dixie Flyer and Associated Motor Industries closed their doors in 1925. It was the end of an era in more ways than one, as a dozen automobile manufacturers closed their doors or merged that year alone. Surprisingly, Jackson automobiles are a relatively common brass-era car. This is not to say they are plentiful. After all, annual production never exceeded 10,000 cars per year. And some models, however, are extremely rare. Now here's your road trip inspiration for the morning. The Ye Olde Carriage Shop Museum in Spring Arbor, Michigan, has in its collection the only existent JAXON, as well as cars representing 16 of the more than 25 automobile manufacturers that were based in Jackson, Michigan. For a moment in time, this was the city to watch. This was a city on the cusp of becoming the Motor City. There is another rarity that rolled from the Jackson factory. East of Jackson, near Grass Lake, in an obscure workshop at a place known locally as Circus Farm, are the vintage fire engine restoration shops owned by Ken Soderbeck. Counted among his treasures is the only known Jackson 4x4 truck. Well, what do you think? Interesting story or fodder for a head full of useless knowledge? Now, let's wrap up today's program with a shout out to the oldest continuously operated motel on Route 66, the one and only Wagon Wheel Motel in Cuba, Missouri. Now, I ask you, can a Route 66 trip be considered complete without a stay at the Wagon Wheel Motel and a visit with Connie Eccles? And I ask you again, what's the best way to get to Cuba, Missouri? Why, the answer is a road trip on Route 66. And what's the best way to enjoy a holiday on this storied old road? Well, you book and plan the holiday with the good folks at Route Trip USA. These are the road trip specialists for a holiday in the U.S. or Canada. They test the pillows, taste the enchiladas, and know the very places for the making of memories. Well, I suppose it's time to stop my gum beating, wrap up another episode of Wake Up with Jim. Until we can meet again, mi amigos. Well, adios. We will see you in the morning. I hope everyone enjoyed the program this morning. And I hope you'll join us again tomorrow. We'll have another story from the infancy of the auto industry. And, do we have some programs lined up next week for you. We have got some great guests on schedule. Well, until then, my friends, adios. Hey, as we get this thing rolling, drop me a note. Leave me a comment. How did you like the program? Would you be willing to share it with your friends? And any ideas or suggestions you might have, well, we're sure willing to listen.
Say hello to a new friend.
Take care, my friends.
On an old road. Take a two-lane trip of memories into mysteries unknown. Come along for the ride. Jim Hinckley's America. Jim Hinckley's America.